Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Is gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy. Woo! IU, America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Yes, it is. Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard to another Thanksgiving-esque celebration as we get closer and closer to the day of Thanksgiving. Next weekend, right? Wow. It's here. Can't believe it. It is. Getting ready to eat. Do some eating. How's everybody doing? Appreciate you being with us. Hope your day is going well. I hope your week went well. Even if it didn't, it's Friday. You made it to the end. Appreciate you. If you're driving around, keep it locked right where you got it. You've got it right where you need it on the radio dial. As you traverse through the day, even without us, you've got it in the right spot. And if you're on social media, you know what to do. Just reach up there and hit that like button, please. And subscribe if you haven't already. Speaking of subscribing, I've been telling you, you need to go to thehoosier.com and subscribe to keep up with everything that is going on much more in-depthly. And not only that, but big prizes throughout as the president would say, prizes. We all like prizes, big prizes. We're going to do it bigger, bigger, bigger than you've ever seen. Biggest prizes in the world. Not really that, but nice Adidas gear. Here's an embroidered Adidas jacket. As you can see, I'm wearing one with the Indiana Sports Beat logo on there. I love that personally. Got the Tiger Woods look going today. Got the red shirt on. We've already had a winner. First winner. Cameron Meade up in Valparaiso. He won a jacket. He's a new subscriber. But he's also in the running for that grand prize giveaway of the Adidas team-issued winter coat that is like a $300 coat. That's actually not public. If you're the public, just can't get this. This is not accessible to the public. Quarter zip and an IU backpack valued over $400. Go to thehoosier.com, subscribe, and make sure you send me your user ID so I know it to put it in. Indiana basketball, not sure how much of a user ID they had last night. Not much of one. Today we're going to talk to James Fletcher. Looking forward to that. And we'll take a break here in a second so we can get actually to him a little sooner than instead of just talking to me. But Dave Fletcher is the On3 bracketologist, and it's still almost impossible to determine where one is going to wind up in as far as the CFP goes. It's we got to play the championship games. We talk about whether these games are even necessary, and I don't know that they are personally. I would never have thought that I would have said that. But things have changed so much that all of a sudden, conference games, it's not that they don't have value per se as far as prestige, but now they're just kind of in the way of what is coming next. Because if you're in a conference championship, you have a team obviously capable of winning a national championship. And you don't want to get guys hurt. You don't want to. You could use the rest usually. And a host of other things. So, but what do? You've got to wait until these conference games play out now. And to see if you, in the case of the Big Ten, it's just a difference between a seeding spot most likely for Indiana or maybe two for Ohio State. I don't know. Would they drop them that far? Two spots doesn't sound like far, but if you're the reigning national champion and you've gone this long, all season long, wire to wire almost as national champions, are you going to, I don't think that they drop them below. If Indiana were to win that game, yeah, they'd move Indiana up to number one. I think they'd move Ohio State to number two. If Indiana lost that game, I think that they'd move it to three and possibly four if Texas Tech goes on and wins out and wins the Big 12. And if there's so many scenarios, if Alabama gets into the SEC championship, they've got a couple losses. Even if they win, you don't have to give them an automatic bye. And I don't think that they'd get the third bye or the second bye. Or they wouldn't get the second bye necessarily. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about it with somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. James Fletcher will join us. We'll break down the scenarios that lay out in front of us. Plenty more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Back with it on this Friday, right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Friday as we head into another weekend, deep into the college football season, week 13. Ooh, unlucky week 13. James Fletcher joins us from On Three. Bracketology, baby. Bracketology in college football. Not a term we've used much before, but it's come around because we've added these teams. The Big Ten wants to add more. I'm a Big Ten guy, but I am not about that big whatever. I don't even know what the hell they're talking about. There's more than enough slots right now, James, I think, as far as teams that are capable of winning.
Yeah, I agree. This is something that not only do we talk about with the basketball tournament, but we talk about with the football tournament now. It's always about expansion. It's always about how many teams can we cram in there, especially how many of these Power Four conference teams can we fit in there? Everyone who's outside the playoff picture, you see right now, either they fired their coach or they feel like it should be expanded. Everybody who's inside pretty much thinks it should stay where it is right now.
Thanks, James, for joining us. James with On Three Bracketology. Again, when you have an On Three subscription, I don't think Well, I know you don't. You don't understand the all-encompassing information that comes with that, not just for your particular team, be it Indiana, but you also get all of the national information like from folks like James and all the great writers that we have on and things like that. So you cannot imagine the information that comes from On3. But now that, yeah, we're into these – all these scenarios, James, for and I put a tweet yesterday. I go, the word that's gonna you're gonna hear too damn much for the next 3 months, scenarios.
Yep.
And that is it, because there are even Indiana's path is clear as crystal clear, but there are a thousand damn scenarios that go along with that, is the funny thing. They can lose and they're fine. I don't they're not gonna be impacted. Ohio State does not have that luxury. Mm-hmm. Then even though you get to the Big Ten Championship, you go in 1-2. I think if Ohio State loses, I think they only drop to the 2 spot. If Indiana were to lose, I could see them dropping them to 3 and possibly 4 because they want to get Texas Tech into that fourth, one of those 4 slots. And they're primed to get in there.
Yeah, I think that's just about right. I think that with Indiana, we're talking about obviously you got to get past that Purdue rivalry game. You never want to take any rivalry for granted, but I think that one's about as locked in as you could get on that final weekend of the season. So once you get there, you talk about an undefeated regular season, and we've seen that this committee has been pretty solid in that they are going to rank the undefeated teams at the top. And then the one loss teams and the two loss teams, the selection committee, the new chairman, Hunter Yurecek, even said as much last week after they revealed the rankings. He said, just look, we did 0 losses, 1 losses, 2 losses. We're going to compare you based on how many losses you have against your opponents. So if we look, take that route, we're talking about Indiana. If they can win the Big Ten title, they're the number one seed. It's locked up. They have that spot. You're talking about number 1 and number 2. You win that matchup, you're going to get the one seed. You're going to go likely to, in that case, to the Rose Bowl. But if you lose that game, I think
see that you said likely there. They can't yes. even they can't even for certain say that they're going to the Rose Bowl if they win the Big Ten Championship. That's the thing that basically sucks.
Yeah, that's the really interesting part of this, is that they give preference to the number one team. And so Indiana would actually, their staff and administration would have a decision to make at that point. You have two.
The teams get the decisions.
They give preference to the conferences and their alignments with each bowl. But of course the Big Ten has an alignment with two different bowls. In this case, they have the Rose Bowl and then the Orange Bowl, which also has a tie-in to that Big Ten conference. So I would assume that Indiana, given the much deeper history they have with the Rose Bowl, would then choose that route. And of course the historic significance of that bowl as well, I would believe they would choose to go that way. But of course the Orange Bowl, a much shorter journey if they were to decide that was important to them and their fans being able to more easily get to that quarterfinal game.
Yeah, and the fact that they've only played in that game once, and that was in 1968, I think that that's another thing that the Big Ten Conference has done in the past. If it's been longer since you played in that game, and that Indiana is covered in all bases when it comes to that. I was just trying to think of a scenario, knowing that the Cotton Bowl is salivating.
Yes.
Salivating, wanting to get Texas Tech. And there's nothing to say that they still can't get them in that bowl game, but if they're a top 4 seed, mm-hmm. how does that scenario play out?
So for Texas Tech to end up in that Cotton Bowl spot, we're looking at Texas A&M having to be the number 2 team above them and getting that Sugar Bowl slot, because that actually, it's interesting. If you go to the College Football Playoff website, their official frequently asked questions page, it singles out the Sugar Bowl specifically in this case. We were talking about giving preference to the teams that have a conference tie-in. Well, the Sugar Bowl has a Big 12 and SEC, so whichever of those conferences has a higher-ranked team is going to get that spot. So the situation where Texas Tech gets the Cotton Bowl would then, yes, be for Texas A&M to get the 2 seed. They go to the Sugar Bowl, and then Texas Tech would get the Cotton Bowl, which does not have any conference tie-in at this time. That would leave Indiana, if they were the 4 seed, to go to the Orange Bowl, because as we said, Ohio State likely would take the Rose Bowl with the historic significance of that game in the Big Ten.
Let's say Indiana's the 3 seed. Let's say they lose to Ohio State and they get moved to the 3 seed as expected. My question is, though, would the committee actually move them purposely to the 4 seed to move Texas Tech up to the 3 seed to make that line? But if proximity has anything to do with it, obviously Indiana closer to Dallas, Texas than it is to Miami, Florida.
Yes. But again, we go to the conference preference there. They have the tie-in to the Orange Bowl. So I believe if they were the 3 seed, they would probably still be shipped to Miami in that case. In what ends up turning out good news for Indiana, I don't think they're going to manipulate any kind of seeding here based on that in order to get you into a certain bowl and Texas Tech into another.
Well, it's going to be warm no matter what. That's a good thing, and it will not be warm in Bloomington, Indiana at that time. What comes up is Indiana is on a bye this particular week, so and much needed. Their offensive line is dinged up, beat up. They've got guys that are, like everybody this time of year, beat up. And then they have the one final game you mentioned with Purdue. James Fletcher, the bracketologist from On3 with me. And then immediately you've got the Big Ten championship game. Then they would have 3 weeks off in essence before their next game, while other teams would play in 2 weeks week and a half, something like that. It's goofy. But conference championship games. I never would have thought that I would ask this question because of the reverence that you still have for them. I mean, the Big Ten championship, the SEC championship, Big 12 championship, for that matter. These are still marquee games. These are very, very, very important things to win in the lore, the annals of college football. But now, with how things have changed, they're almost, I don't want to say a hindrance, but I don't know the right word to use for them, but unnecessary is one of them, unless you're a team that barely makes it into your conference championship and you can vault in the seeding. But usually when if you listen to the committee, not a lot of movement coming out of these unless there's an upset.
Yeah, that's what's going to be really interesting about this year's cycle is that we know the ACC and then that fifth highest champion as well, probably coming from the American Conference. We're assuming at this point, given the way the rankings have fallen the last couple of weeks, we know that they're going to get like the 11 and 10 or 12 seed because they're off the pack. Even Miami, the highest ranked ACC team, probably not even making their conference championship game. So that leaves us with the three conference championship games to talk about. The Big Ten one is likely going to be number one versus number two in the country. So you can't go wrong there. Like we said, they're probably both locked into those top four spots. But then you look at the Big 12. You talked about Texas Tech and the potential for them to move up the board if they win that title. Well, BYU is going to get a rematch, and we know how hard it is to beat a team twice in one season. BYU is currently off the back end of the current college football playoff field. So if they win, I think it's highly unlikely that they move all the way up into the top four and get a bye. Same situation in the SEC, where Texas A&M, if they can win against Texas, will make it. And Alabama is currently the most likely team to play them in that final matchup in Atlanta. And so what happens if Alabama wins that SEC championship? I don't know if they're going to be able to move all the way from 10 all the way up into this conversation for a top four seed. So it gets really interesting if we have a couple upsets in conference championship weekend. We could end up with a scenario where even if the loser of the Big Ten title game suffers that loss, they could still end up the two seed if things fall right for them across the country.
If Texas or if, yeah, Texas A&M stubs their toe against Texas, they're out of the top four, but that would also potentially get Texas back in, because I think Texas is out right now, and I think deservingly so. But yeah, it's going. It's odd. The SEC appears to be deep. We think they are. I mean, I think they are. But even as a Big Ten guy, I've seen, and we'll talk about this more later. But the Big Ten obviously the best at the top, and it's not just because of a opinion. Man, mm-hmm. I pour through these statistics, and you look through the NCAA stats, both sides of the ball. Indiana, Ohio State, quarterback, offense, touchdowns, third down conversion, third down defense conversion. It's amazing how closely these teams mirror each other. As a matter of fact, Indiana, defensively, everyone is thinking that Ohio State has the best defense. I'm not sold on that, because they are very good and they may be the best defense. I'm not sold that Indiana is not as good. They're just slightly different. An example is they've given up 500 more yards passing,
mm-hmm.
but they've given up one more touchdown. Ohio State has 5 interceptions. Indiana has 15. Indiana has one guy alone that has one less interception than the entire Ohio State team. So yeah. Indiana is number one in takeaways. I think it's an equal, man. This could be an amazing conference championship. So I say that on the heels of, are these games necessary anymore? It's not no, they're not necessary. Should they be played with in a conference like the Big Ten, or if it was the SEC? No, the SEC, actually, they kind of need it. That's odd. But right now, the Big Ten, these teams don't need, neither of them need to play in this game.
Yeah, I think if you could take both teams and you said, look, we can just take this game off the schedule. You guys are likely to be number one and number two in the final rankings, and then you'll get the top two seeds. You wouldn't meet until the national championship game if that were to occur. They'd probably look at each other, and they would never admit it in public. They would say that we're competitors. We want to go out there every weekend. But if you were behind closed doors, they might look at each other and go, that sounds pretty good. If we can get those top two seeds locked up, don't have to suffer any more injuries, don't have to go up against the two best teams in the country, the kind of physical toll that takes on everybody as they're out there. But conference championship games are in a really interesting spot right now. Some of them are still vital. We're going to watch an ACC game that's going to put a team into the college football playoff probably for the first time, whoever it is that gets in. So that one's going to be electric. We talk about the potential for a Texas A&M Alabama. Alabama could very well be playing for their spot in the college football playoff, something that we know at a place like that is extremely important to them and their coaches' job security. So it's going to be interesting. Some of them hold incredible meaning. Some of them seem to now be more of a negative for the teams that are going into it. So they're going to have to figure it out. There's going to have to be some kind of conversation around it. You obviously never want it to hurt the teams, but how do you help teams using the conference championships without it hurting a couple of other teams? That's the kind of holdup there.
Yeah. And now we've seen the Big Ten introduce this. I call it a crazy ass. I love the Big Ten, but let's be honest. That's a crazy ass. Nobody wants to see 24. You don't need 24 teams. I mean, there, in my opinion, James Fletcher from On Three, there aren't 10 teams that can win the national championship. I don't think, personally. I think there's just a line where you can just see they don't have the quarterback play or whatever the case is. You know, there's just a line between, where would you go? Virginia and Indiana, Virginia and Ohio State, Virginia, and Alabama. There's just a line. You think, one would think, but that's why they play the games. And some of those crossovers we'll get to see. Yeah. Georgia Tech needs that game desperately for certain. Games that are coming up. Games this weekend. There are important games this weekend, James, that are going to determine exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Mostly in the SEC. The Big Ten, their fourth team is on life support, in my opinion. I mean, they are struggling to get a fourth team in. Part of it is because they don't have the cachet of the SEC, and so the games don't appear to be as good. But then you don't know that these teams aren't better than they really are. It's just all this perception. But what are some of the games you're looking at this weekend that may turn the tide for some teams?
Well, I think the absolute biggest one is right there in the Big Ten. It's USC and Oregon. That one is going to play a vital role because, look, we can pencil in Ohio State to that Big Ten championship game, but let's be honest, they have struggled with Michigan in recent years. That's still something they have to get off their back. Even last year, they win the national title. They still weren't able to take down a down Michigan team. So you look at that game, just kind of write and pin at your own peril Ohio State into that title game, because if they lose to Michigan, we end up in a tiebreaker scenario that would then put likely the winner of USC Oregon to that championship game against Indiana. So that's the big one that I'm watching. It's kind of the like you said, that also increases the playoff chances for whichever of those teams wins. Oregon, I think it pretty much locks them in. USC, it would give them that fighting chance right now on the outside looking in to make it.
And USC has been one of those teams that has been, I don't want to say an afterthought, but they've been like, okay, yeah, they can get in but they're still out there. They still have that if. Illinois does not have that if. Iowa has lost that if. As you just said, USC, the only team. Plus, they have the cachet of being USC, but they have a great offense. The Big Ten has got like five of the top seven throwing quarterbacks in the country, which is amazing when we used to consider the Big Ten the 3 yards and a cloud of dust. It's now it's 3 yards is just the quarterback backing up to throw the damn ball. But yeah, it would be good for the Big Ten to get USC in, and especially if they could sneak a team in and then get a win. Wow, how big would that be for the conference? Because the perception is still this SEC is swinging big, but you know what? The teams are at the top are still from the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's for sure. And the SEC, you're going to see they're going to have a lot of their teams play in that first round. And so it's going to be interesting how many teams can get through to that quarterfinal, where we know that the Big Ten likely to already have two comfortably sitting there. The SEC probably only going to have one. That's there. There is a scenario, of course, that I outlined earlier where Texas Tech, would lose the Big 12 title. That could open up for that Georgia team that's sitting there as the only team in the top four right now that looks more likely to drop than to rise over these past couple of or last few weeks, just because they aren't going to play a championship game. They can't use that final data point that the committee is going to look at to boost their stock in this thing. I'm just so interested to see, though, how this thing gets seeded at the end, because we're going to see these conference championship losses knock teams down into that next tier of teams. And how does the committee then look at them? I really am not 100% sure what they're going to do at this point, but it's going to be fun to watch and see. Do they rank the SEC teams higher than the rest? Because if you ask the SEC coaches, they don't think they're ranked high enough right now. You ask the Big Ten coaches, they probably think, hey, they're ranked way too high. Our guys deserve a little bit more love. It's all in who's looking at the data, depending on what feedback you're going to get.
And not only that, there have been changes recently on the College Football Selection Committee. And if I was never, and am still not really a conspiracy theorist kind of a person. That's not, but sometimes, like, and I use this as a great example last year when Bubba Cunningham, the AD for North Carolina, just boldly put North Carolina into the NCAA tournament when they sucked ass and didn't deserve it. Stuff happens. And not only do you have, first of all, the guy that was removed, Rhodes, from Baylor, out of a job now because of all of his crap that he's had going on. This was the guy that was the chair of this committee, first of all, people. Okay. Now he's gone. They've got new people in, but the chair is an SEC AD. And I don't care what anybody says. If you think that doesn't matter, you're full of crap and you're naive and you just fell off the turnip truck. It matters because these conferences stick together. I mean, it's like watch, if you're a NASCAR fan, it's like Chevrolet and Ford. Let me tell you, if there is a Ford driver in the lead and a Chevy driver that can challenge, I promise you a Ford driver is not going to help the Chevy guy. It's just how it is. And the SEC is not going to help the Big Ten. And the SEC is still, I think they're still pissed off last year, James, about not getting more than three teams in. So they're really wanting to make a bunch of noise this year.
Well, you cut me deep there with that NASCAR comparison as a Denny Hamlin fan who watched a Chevy drive into the wall and then another Chevy win the championship. That one hurt a little bit, but no, it's definitely just ripe for conspiracy theories to have Hunter Yurecek take over that spot. Obviously, we saw everyone campaigning for him to get the role. I don't think that helps the perception, even though he was likely the next in line, regardless of who campaigned or, made cases for him to take over. What I think is probably most interesting about him being the pick is that his job security at Arkansas doesn't seem to be rock solid either. We went from a guy who gets wrapped up in conspiracy, gets fired midway through the season, to another guy who, if you ask Arkansas fans, they probably want him out from the Arkansas AD position as well. So it seems like there's just all kinds of chaos all over here. I think that committee, look, they're set up to be criticized. And I think if you go into one of those positions and you don't accept that and understand that from the day that you walk into that room, you're just being ignorant. You are in a no-win position. If you put a bunch of SEC teams in, every other conference is going to roll their eyes. If you leave SEC teams out, well, who's the most vocal conference with the most vocal media out there pumping for them? We see Paul Feinbaum on TV every week on regular ESPN in addition to the SEC network. So you're never going to win with who you put in the field. So I think that it's always in their best interest to just see the teams the best that they can. And I think that that's generally what they try to do. Of course, here and there, you'll see some biases that you can't help but kind of squint your eyes at. But I don't know. It's such a hard job. And as someone who tries to predict what they're going to do, I do not envy them having to actually make the decisions either.
No, let's give Fulton a big shout out. He's going to be doing his special Singing in the Rain with his cast and his director, Bethany Worrell. So congratulations. He's our Special Olympian, man. He does well in the Special Olympics. And Fulton, congratulations. Good luck. Yeah. You got time for a little bit more because there's a little bit more I'd love to talk about. James Fletcher from On3 Bracketology is with us, and we're talking CFP right now and all the different scenarios, Cereos and Cheerios and all kinds of O's. Back with more Indiana Sports Speed Radio right after these messages. Back in Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this. We're getting closer and closer to Thanksgiving. Got some pumpkins all up and around in there. The studio looks like. Not really, but pretending. Man, all I think about when Thanksgiving is more football, man. And we've got tons of that coming up this weekend with some big games that James Fletcher from On Three we've talked about, especially in the SEC. But the Big Ten has an important game with USC as they are fighting for their playoff life as well. Another strange scenario is Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. This coaching carousel where there are so many coaching openings, not that, I mean, he's just going to be geared towards mainly probably one. Probably it's either LSU or nothing for Lane Kiffin. I think that with John Daggonit from Tulane already having turned that job down, that means to me that Lane Kiffin has probably made it known through back channels that not interested in going to Florida for some reason. And since he hasn't shut it down, he's either waiting for one hell of a pay raise or he's going to go to LSU, in my opinion.
Man, I don't know if I would rule out Florida yet. I think that people around Florida that you talk to, they still think that it's being pushed for pretty hard. People at LSU pushing pretty hard for Lane Kiffin as well. I just don't know if anyone who tells you that they know what Lane Kiffin is going to do can say that with any amount of confidence.
Probably the factual thing. Yeah. The biggest factual thing that's said today.
I genuinely don't think that he knows yet. I think that you look at the history of Lane Kiffin, you look at more recent history, and you talk to people who are kind of have been around him in the past, as I have done. I've never gotten the chance to speak with him in person, talk to him on the teleconferences, the media day stuff, all that, but never spent real time around him. So I've talked to people who have. And what they consistently tell you is that Lane is the type of guy who will go to bed feeling absolutely confident that he's taking the Florida job. And he will wake up and think, man, I love it in Oxford. I can't leave this place. And then the next day he'll go, yeah, LSU, they've got everything lined up for me. And then he'll come back home and be like, but Florida, that's Steve Spurrier's place. You know, that's the kind of vibe that I'm getting, is that it is truly a day-to-day thing. When you see these, oh, he's leaning Florida, oh, he's leaning LSU, he's leaning towards staying. I think that might be coming in real time, but I don't think that it's ultimately going to have a bearing on what he decides to do at the finish line. I think that it's truly one of the most difficult decisions we've ever seen on the coaching carousel. The kind of legacy that he can just cement at Ole Miss if he stays versus chasing the legacy that he's dreamed of his entire life. How do you fault a guy no matter what he chooses? But of course, you're also going to become a villain no matter what you choose to do at this point. He doesn't have the luxury of just being the good guy in this story.
And part of what makes this so difficult is the timing of the college football playoffs. If this were just a bowl game, who cares? It's a bowl game. It's not. But that begs the question, what can he do at Florida that he can't do at Ole Miss?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting
LSU for that matter. Right. Although I will say, I've not been to a game at Ole Miss, but knowing LSU is regarded as the nighttime football experience in the country.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin has said as much in his own press conferences at Ole Miss throughout the time that LSU gets the preferential kickoff times in the SEC. That's well known. They get their night kickoffs when they're at home. So if you're Lane Kiffin, I think you're basically weighing, do I go chase a slightly easier path in terms of historical prestige, in terms of total resources that I'm going to be given, all of those things, or do I stay somewhere where I have a little bit more cushion in my pursuit of that? At Ole Miss, if he goes 8-4 next year, they're going to be frustrated, but he's not getting fired. We just saw what happens when you lose three times at LSU and don't have a national title under your belt over the past couple of seasons. Brian Kelly got fired. Ed Orgeron was fired shortly after a national championship there. So that is a job that is...
You talk about my man.
Win it all. Yeah, you win it all or you're gone.
I'm back and coach.
Yeah, and reports from around the country that LSU would even let Ed Orgeron come back to the staff as an assistant if Lane Kiffin were to take the job. That's how hard they're pursuing this guy.
they would let Les Miles and Ed Orgeron be assistants if they could get Lane Kiffin.
I think so.
I'm going to have you jump out and rejoin us. I don't. There's maybe a connection issue. I don't know if it's your mic or if it's the connection issue. But if you could just jump out and rejoin us real quick. But yeah, I believe that, buddy. The governor himself would say, "Hey, man, you can have whoever you want as an assistant. You want Les Miles? You want Ed Orgeron?" Oh, Ed Orgeron. He said, "All right, I'll come in, man. Just hey, look, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do, man? We win another national championship." But yeah, I think that they would do pretty much whatever. It's Louisiana, man. They're never too shy about. I was just saying, and while you were gone, I was like, yeah, LSU's not exactly shy about doing whatever needs to be done. I think we've seen from the governor appearing on things like with Pat McAfee, and you know, how many governors do we see on, you know, on a show like that where he's talking about how, oh no, he's not gonna be making the next election now. Yeah, we gonna get us a new coach. We're gonna get us a coach. The coach is gonna win now. We're gonna win. That seems a little rough to be the next coach coming in, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of setting up for there when we had the connection issues was, man, if you're Lane Kiffin, do you add that much stress to your life when you just released a whole documentary on how you found this peace that you found through yoga and living in Oxford, having your family back around you, all the comfort and peace you have in your life? Do you really want to go somewhere where 3 weeks into the season, they're already going to be rumbling about how much they're paying you, about who they put on your staff, about how close can you get to a national championship? That's why I think that Florida is not out of this at all. The history of him idolizing Steve Spurrier to honestly just how down Florida has been in the last couple of years. You would have to think that while the expectations, yes, I think are higher and a little bit more cutthroat than Ole Miss, that they would give him a little bit more time, given what they're coming off of the past couple of coaches, at least that they've had, thinking, well, look, we got the guy that we believe is the home run hire. Let's give him a little bit of time here. Let's understand that our program was headed in the wrong direction for quite a while. I think it's so interesting that we're having this conversation, though, given Kurt Cignetti doing just about the opposite of what Lane Kiffin did and shutting all these things down immediately, signing that extension day one, the second his name got brought into these rumors.
Yeah, and it's Lane Kiffin-esque, for one thing, which is not a problem, because I think that he probably handles that stuff easier than a lot of guys, because he plays with the social media. He likes to have fun with it, where most guys are not, you know, they're not really doing it that much. But it's probably something that he's seriously considering. He's been at Ole Miss for what, 5 years now, at least?
At least 5 years. I think it's been longer than that, actually.
It might have been. My daughter would probably cry if he leaves, being a recent grad and currently in grad school there. But yeah, it's, and I get back to, what about the college football playoffs? What happens if, because he can't wait. That's another thing. Because of the timing, you can't wait that long. If he were to leave, what would you do to Ole Miss? Is this akin to Florida State losing their quarterback a few years ago?
Man, I think it's going to be – it's interesting to look at, because we have the precedent that Florida State kind of got just booted out because they didn't have a quarterback. But with Ole Miss, I think that the committee has almost kind of pigeonholed themselves into what you can't drop Ole Miss. You've got them way too high up. You've already seeded these one loss teams. You've made it clear that you're doing that based on how many wins and losses each team ends with. They're not going to go to the SEC title game. So you're not going to have that to lean on that, oh, they added another loss to their resume. You're looking at a team that's going to probably finish sixth in the rankings, and yeah, you could drop them down, but are you going to be able to drop them five spots just based on their coach? Which then leaves you with the question, if you're Ole Miss, if Lane is gone, what do we do? Pete Golding and Charlie Weiss, the two coordinators there, neither of them with any head coaching experience. I don't know. I think you almost have to try to make a hire before the college football playoff and get that new staff to immediately integrate there, which is something almost unprecedented in college football to try to do. And we're seeing a similar situation with John Summerall at Tulane and the kind of next up candidate for a lot of these jobs when his Tulane team is now slotted to be in the playoff. And don't forget that the coaches are the ones who put this transfer portal where it is. They are the ones who created this problem for themselves.
The only guys that aren't going to like it are the guys that are still playing.
Right. Exactly. And that's what I think was so interesting about that decision is that you've heard coaches argue, why are we putting it here? And it's just another decision by the NCAA. And yes, the coaches have had some input in this and some of the other decisions where you're clearly chasing an easier job. You look at your job and you say, man, it is so hard, the grind of having to deal with the portal and recruiting and prep for a bowl game. I just want to push it back. And then you push it back and you say, uh-oh, look where it landed. And so they're going to have to keep adapting this. They're going to have to keep tweaking these rules because it feels like with the NCAA in particular and these coaches do it as well, they're just trying to get some pressure off of their plate, something off of their table in the short term. And it ends up having these consequences that they then have to deal with a year or two down the line.
Yeah, and it's just going to be fun as the season itself continues to be incredible. Last year was the best in college football, and this year has been just as good with teams. You just don't know who's going to win it, and I'm looking forward to this playoff once we get there, but we've got plenty more to come along. James Fletcher from On Three with me, and James, I look forward to having you back on as we get a little closer and determine exactly who, what, when, and where.
Yep, great to be on. Enjoyed talking. Thanks.
You betcha. Make sure you are a subscriber to the On3Hoosier.com. You can catch great information from people like James Fletcher and the myriad of great national writers at On3. We've got plenty more coming up. We're going to hear from Zach Osterman, from Alec Lasley, from the Hoosier.com. We're going to hear from Darren DeVries, Tucker DeVries, and Sam Alexis as the Hoosiers' kind of sleepy performance last night on the basketball court. Yeah, second in a row. Cause for concern a little bit, but because of who it was against, yeah, well, maybe not. But lots more coming up. Back with it right after these messages. Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Friday. Glad to have you along for the ride as we head into another fun sports weekend. Indiana basketball played last night. So, they're going to be off for a few days. Indiana football with an off week. So they're off until next Friday night as they will travel to West Lafayette to take on the Purdue Boilermakers to potentially end their season at 12-0, a historical season. And it will is expected to be just that. Can it go to 13-0 and then more? Who knows? Katie bars the door. Last night, Indiana basketball had another sleepy performance. Zach Osterman, the IU insider for the Indy Star. All right, what do we got on today, Zach? I've got to see this.
It's just a Blackhawks sweatshirt.
Oh, Blackhawks. There we go. That looks like that would be very warm in Chicago, I can promise you. And looks like something I could have used a couple of weeks ago there.
I think I bought it because I was in Chicago for a trip and it was underdressed. So
that will certainly prompt one to do that. Indiana basketball on the floor last night, Zach. A sleepy performance, their second in a row. And I know some people are kind of ringing bells, but I'm like, it's hard for a lot of people to get revved up for a 6 o'clock Wednesday game or Thursday game during the week. And although you cannot excuse not being ready to play, I know that I'm not sure that this team is that that's going to be their MO.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some things you can draw from a game like that that are concerning. The rebounding is just going to be an issue all year long. I think we could tell that even in Puerto Rico. And if it's a problem clearing the defensive boards against Lindenwood, then it's going to be a bigger problem doing it against, you know, Big Ten teams. And I know, you know, we heard from Sam Alexis and Tucker DeVries last night that, oh, we just got to be tougher. We'll get it fixed. And I'm sure they will be better. But in the same breath, I mean, you know, this team's played what now? 5 regular season games in addition to 5 preseason games. It's not like they haven't. It's not like this wasn't a point of emphasis before, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So there are some things that are concerning. I think you can count on Lamar Wilkerson to shoot better than what was he? I think 4 of 17 from behind the 3-point line, especially at home last night. You know, in general, I think that this team is probably going to go through some offensive malaise at times this year. Like, I think that's just something that's going to happen when you have a team built around 3-point shooting. The reality is that you're going to get you're going to live on the more extreme ends of the variance spectrum sometimes. Like, there are going to be nights when the shots just don't go in, and it's going to look like we're talking about here a lot worse than, you know, I mean, if Indiana had made 3 more threes last night, they would still only been 12 of 28. That's about what, 38-40%. Like, that's about where I think this team's going to wind up shooting for the season more widely. And if they'd made 3 more threes, they would have won the game 82-53, and nothing about it seems particularly sort of noteworthy. So, you know, your point, I think, is valid, too, about the start time and the crowd and the energy in the building and all that. I would worry a little bit about fatigue. And this is not necessarily something that's going to hit right now, but like, this team's clock did start, you know, a lot earlier than what is normal because of the preseason tour. They were practicing and playing games in the summer. And, you know, you're in these games now where, like, Tate and Conaway's playing 28 minutes, Lamar Wilkerson 32, Tucker DeVries 35. I think a weekend off before the Kansas State game would really help this team. But, you know, it's kind of one of those where you're trying to figure out what matters here and what doesn't. And I suspect that there are going to be elements of this that we'll look back on and say, well, that was a bit concerning. But I think there's also going to be elements of some of these games that just aren't going to matter very much in February, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not like this is something we haven't seen before from other teams. So having seen the guys play and understanding how they play, it's not something that I think is going to be an issue. And I think that something that Darren DeVries said kind of rung home that, you know, if Lamar Wilkerson's having a 4 for 17 night, then, or, you know, 4 for 24 night, whatever it was, and then he says that means he's got a 17 for 24 night coming. So we're not concerned about it. It's going to happen. You just hope it happens in the games where it's more difficult to get other parts of your game to be superior against the opponent. Last, you know, a game against Lindenwood or any of these Alabama A&M and sort of, you can, I don't want to say sleepwalk through them from a shooting perspective and still win. You're not going to be able to do that against Kansas State, against Louisville, against Kentucky. So that's what you want, to make sure that the Pistons are firing.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think that Kansas State game is going to be a fascinating test. I mean, Kansas State's already beaten a couple of high major teams. I mean, not necessarily good high major teams. They beat Cal at home in a shootout, and then they buried Mississippi State last night. Now, Mississippi State, I suspect, is not very good this year. They've not looked particularly good this year, but still, you know, I mean, Kansas State's numbers this season in terms of scoring 93, 98, 99, 84, 98. Like, the Kansas State has been putting up big numbers. They're incredibly efficient offensively. I think that is going to be a very sort of real test. I mean, that's at least right now, Wildcats are a top 50 team in KenPom. So I think that game suddenly becomes more of a barometer of where this team is, especially because, and I don't think you take things away too much away from Indiana, but that Marquette win is fading a little bit. Marquette is just really struggling right now. They've lost to Maryland. They've lost to, I think they lost to Dayton at home. So
I've said it several times. I think Milwaukee is a better team than Marquette.
Yeah, I mean, maybe right now at least. But the point is, I think that the Kansas State game is going to be maybe more of a barometer than what we thought it might be when Indiana threw it on the schedule, because then Kansas State might wind up being a little bit better than what we expected this season, especially offensively. I think it could be a game that you know, frankly, provides some fireworks when you look at the pace these two teams play at. And if you're Indiana, you know, it is maybe a little bit of a test of, hey, you've kind of had a couple sleepy performances here, you know, against Incarnate Word. It was kind of the second half defensive lull. Against Lindenwood, it was the rebounding effort. Against both teams, frankly, it was an offense that just couldn't quite find its way out of second gear for any sustained stretch of time. But, you know, this is the kind of game, if you're Indiana, you need to be winning it, but you're at least, you need to be expecting a bit of a test too. And I think there's some ways in which Indiana can kind of take advantage of Kansas State. But there are some ways I suspect Kansas State is really going to stress test Indiana as well. And it's going to be, I mean, you know, it's going to be, especially because Indiana gets the weekend off to kind of rest and prepare and maybe recover a little bit. It's going to be really, really interesting to see what it looks like next Tuesday.
Zach Osterman, the IU insider for the Indy Star, rather, with us as he is each Friday. Zach, something probably not a lot of people are paying attention to, but is really a big event behind the scenes with the Big Ten, is the potential of the Big Ten, in essence, selling part of itself to a private equity firm. That would be a first for a conference, but I think that this is a step in the wrong direction. The University of Maryland's Board of Regents has come out publicly and denounced this as anything good for the league. I think it's
Michigan has, not Maryland. I
don't know why I said Maryland.
Yeah, but it's just, honestly, it's important. Just because, I mean, there's a lot of,
they swing a bigger weight. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So,
and is it USC, the West Coast team, or UCLA? I can't remember. I think it's USC.
It's USC. Yes.
Yeah. So, and this is the Big Ten's attempt at infusing a bunch of cash, a couple of $1 billion into the league, but are you selling your soul to do that? And does the Big Ten need to do that right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, there is a lot to kind of, there's a lot to unpack with this private capital deal.
And I don't expect you to bring.
No, I mean, there's every conference has explored this, at least at some level. Even the ones that have said, "Oh, our ADs don't want it," or "Our presidents don't want it." No one out there hasn't explored this. Because costs are going to keep rising. And frankly, for a lot of schools, television revenues are not. You know, the Big Ten will, the SEC will, everybody else is, you know, staring at a very uncertain financial future. Not that all the money's going to go away, but that after so many years of sort of college sports as this media rights boom town, that is slowing down considerably. And we can have a separate philosophical conversation about whether people should have been more responsible and should have built out more of a rainy day fund, knowing, I mean, because like 10 years ago when the O'Bannon lawsuit sort of concluded, you could tell where the idea of player compensation and amateurism was going, and college athletics just kind of buried its head in the sand and kept spending and spending. But what you have now is schools that still have, you know, millions of pounds of debt service and a bottom line that is going to just keep getting tighter and tighter. You know, I think people are going to be surprised next year when they find out how many athletics departments in even like the richest conferences are underwater financially. So point is, everyone's explored this. The Big Ten moved ahead with it at a level that, you know, other conferences have not. There have been objections from Michigan, which is one of the schools that, as you say, swings a heavy bat, but also maybe is, you know, sort of least in need of this kind of capital infusion. It's worth saying there's also probably some political sort of complications there. I don't think Michigan was very pleased with the way Tony Petitti and the conference office kind of conducted the conference's response to the Connor Stallions situation and the science stealing scandal. And, you know, I'm not picking a side on that. The point is, I think there are some unmended fences there that may be playing into this as well. I don't want to oversimplify it. My impression is that USC just feels like it's not comfortable entering into this arrangement unless it gets more money.
Which is ironic since they're getting a full Big Ten share right off the bat of joining the conference
when everybody else that's come in has had to stagger their way up.
And they haven't done jack squat, to be honest with you, on football or basketball.
Well, so the Big Ten is quick to call this private capital, not private equity. And they argue that the difference is that there's no debt incurred and there's no payback obligation. So this is the University of California pension system, retirement fund. I'm not sure exactly how it phrases itself. This is the investment arm of that fund. So this is the arm that's taking money out of that fund and investing it to grow that fund for the future. It's called UC Investments, and what's proposed is that they buy a 10% stake in what the Big Ten will form as an organization called Big Ten Enterprises, where the Big Ten will funnel all of its revenues, television revenues, bowl revenues, CFP revenues, everything through Big Ten Enterprises. The idea being even that the Big Ten will start negotiating commercial and marketing sponsorships on behalf of all 18 schools together. The belief that if you bundle that if each of those schools, you know, negotiates its own individual deals, then the power of those individual brands will not be as great as the amount of money that the Big Ten would be able to get from, I don't know, like Coca-Cola. If the Big Ten says, we are now going to make Coca-Cola the official drink of all 18 Big Ten schools, then Coke will give the Big Ten enough money that everyone will get more than if they negotiated their own beverage rights individually.
Kind of like Notre Dame and NBC.
Yeah, I mean, very similar kind of what the Big Ten is arguing with Big Ten Enterprises, that if the Big Ten as a whole funnels all of this money and all this commercial activity and partnership and sponsorship through one unified, bundled organization, it will make more money on those partnerships and sponsorships and commercial deals for all of its conference members than if they negotiated them individually. So if you think about it a certain way, the UC Investments deal is $2.4 billion in upfront capital for a 10% stake in Big Ten Enterprises. So that's the Big Ten essentially valuing Big Ten Enterprises at $24 billion. So basically the conference at $24 billion. And there would be an uneven split of the rest of the money. I think it's like 5.5% to Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State, 5% to Oregon and USC, and 4.9% to everyone else. There are a variety of objections to this. I think it's fair to say the majority of conference members want it, but I think at this point it's, I don't know if it's on life support, but I think it is certainly coming untracked. This week, UC Investments released a statement basically saying we're not really comfortable entering into this arrangement if the Big Ten is not sort of like, if the Big Ten's not prepared to approve it unanimously, if the Big Ten is not sort of united in its support of this deal, we're not sure we want to enter into it, which makes sense. I mean, if you were that fund, you're saying, listen, this is $2.4 billion. We can't have uncertainty. We don't want to buy an equity stake in the conference that winds up being, you know, part of the reason or the triggering factor in somehow breaking apart the conference. because then that's a bad investment on our end as much as anything else. So the point is that, you know, there's a lot more that we could get into, but that's kind of where things stand. And at least people I have talked to feel that no one's used the word dead to me with the private capital deal, but certainly there is, I would say, substantially less optimism that it's going to get passed, that it's going to get approved, and the partnership will actually come to pass than what was probably the case a week ago.
And we have not heard much, if anything, from Indiana's take on this. And actually, we haven't heard much from anybody else's take in the conference on it besides Michigan and USC expressing their concerns with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it the rest of the conference has generally kind of tried to hang fire on a lot of this. And you know, the legitimate concerns I think that Michigan in particular might hold is that one of the arms of this agreement is a 10-year extension of the grant of rights for all Big Ten schools. So anyone who's followed kind of the drama in the ACC will know the grant of rights is like a legally binding structure that grants, it does what it says, it grants the Big Ten the authority to essentially bundle the individual sort of rights, broadcast rights, commercial rights, whatever, of all of its schools together and then represent them on their behalf. What that does is it essentially is signing over branding rights to the Big Ten, which means it is the, you know, it is the structure most directly holding a conference together. And anyone, again, who followed the drama in the ACC will know the ACC's grant of rights goes through, I think, 2036. Clemson and FSU have been exploring ways to try and get out of it. That was resolved this past year when the ACC created a staggered television payment plan. It is perhaps worth pointing out that this would usher in a world of uneven revenue distribution in the Big Ten as well, which has long been something the conference has resisted. But there is sort of a, you know, that this is, I think, the Big Ten trying to create a sort of bulwark against losing schools to a potential super conference. But a school like Michigan has the, you know, the money and the political sway to say, well, we don't necessarily need to sign that grant of rights. If we don't believe this deal is good for Michigan, you know, what's our incentive to locking ourselves into the Big Ten for another 10 years? And I don't think the Big Ten's going to break up tomorrow. Like this stuff doesn't happen overnight. Like if, cause that for a while today, like November 21st was being sort of floated as the day that the Big Ten might potentially vote on this. And it was widely reported that the Big Ten was even prepared to vote without Michigan and USC and sort of say, we're going to approve this deal across the rest of the conference. And if at a later date you would like to join on, then we will bring you, you know, sort of into the fold. I don't believe that's happening today, but it does speak to the wider idea that, you know, when you see something like a conference breaking up, it does not happen overnight. There's not one precipitating nuclear event that just fractures the whole thing forever. It is sort of a steady erosion of, you know, the foundation that's sort of holding everything up. And I think there's a fear, and I suspect it's a justifiable one, although, you know, reasonable minds can disagree, that this deal and the feeling in particular that the Big Ten would kind of have to force this deal down the throat of some of its members would feel like one of those precipitating moments. And so that is, I think, why UC investments sort of hit pause on the deal. Again, the idea being if for no reason other than simply because, you know, they do not have a debt obligation from this, per my understanding, they are only getting a 10% return on whatever annual revenue Big Ten Enterprises makes. That's the Big Ten's argument for it being private capital, not private equity. The Big Ten doesn't owe a fixed amount to UC investments no matter what happens to the Big Ten's finances. It's not like, you know, the bank saying, well, we don't care that you made less money this year. You still owe the same amount on your mortgage. It is, UC Investment saying we will take a 10% share annually for at least the next 15 years of Big Ten revenues because we believe that in the long term, that will be more money than the $2.4 billion we're putting in up front, that we'll get return on investment. But if you're UC Enterprises, you don't want to create the, you know, you don't want to be part of creating the environment or the, you know, sort of the you know, helping sort of contribute to the idea of fracturing the Big Ten, because then your investment becomes less valuable. So, you know, this is all stuff that, like, I know people, I know people are really fatigued by all this, and I totally understand why. And you start talking to people about it, and they just kind of, after a while, I think they roll their eyes because, you know, you're a fan. You just want to watch sports. You just want to watch the game on Saturday or Tuesday or, you know, whatever, or the soccer game on Sunday, whatever. You know, there is like a deeply philosophical conversation to have about a lot of this, because it's, people don't want, in particular, college athletics to feel like a business. And I understand why.
Too late, unfortunately.
Well, it's hard because, for example, you say you don't want college sports to behave like a business, and it doesn't, because if it did, it would only sponsor two sports, because only two sports make money. But in the same breath, you know, how thrilled were Indiana fans when, across the course of the last 24 months, Indiana, increased Kurt Cignetti's annual salary like fourfold? How angry are Ole Miss fans going to be if Lane Kiffin leaves for more money at LSU or Florida? You don't want it to be a business, except when you do, but it can't be. It can't be both without some significant financial complications. And I'm not necessarily endorsing the idea of, you know, private capital in college sports, but, you know, the money has to be real at some point. It can't just be, you know, you have to pay the bills somewhere, somehow. And if you can't, you have to make some difficult decisions. And that's when you start wanting college sports to behave more like a business. And it's complex, but listen, I mean, these are just the problems of our time. We have been having this conversation in different ways, and there have been, you know, so many cries of wolf throughout college athletics history. This is an incredibly complicated time, and there are going to be some things that emerge from this that I think people won't like very much. And when I say this, I just mean this era in college athletics. But I don't think it's going away, and I don't think the things that make it popular are ultimately going away either. And I think people will figure it out.
I agree. There's nothing we can do about it other than deal with it. Indiana football off this weekend with an off week, of course, as they all take on Purdue next Friday evening, looking for a 12-0 undefeated regular season for the first time in program history. The basketball team off until this coming Tuesday, when they will host Kansas State. Zach, you have an open weekend.
There's still some big stuff going on campus. I don't know if I'll be allowed by domestic responsibilities to get out, but obviously soccer's got an NCAA tournament game on Sunday against St. Louis. Volleyball's hosting number one Nebraska, a team that's only lost one set all year, not match, set. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the get-in price for that game was over $350 last time I checked. So, yeah.
What?
Go to StubHub and look up the tickets for IU Nebraska at Wilkinson Hall on Saturday night.
Wow.
Yep. Penn State football get-in price is like $2 this weekend. IU Nebraska volleyball is. And, I mean, that's, a lot of that is reflective of obviously Nebraska. But it is a big moment for Indiana. I mean, if Indiana
set a program record.
Yeah, Indiana's like ranked. Indiana's going to the NCAA tournament. Indiana's got a really good chance at hosting games in the NCAA tournament. Like, this is almost certainly the best regular season, at least, maybe the best season, full stop, in Indiana volleyball history. I don't want to minimize any of that when I say if Indiana beat Nebraska, if Indiana beats Nebraska on Saturday night, if Indiana even gets Nebraska to five sets on Saturday night, it will be one of the most remarkable results of the fall sports calendar across all of Division I college athletics. Like, Nebraska volleyball is dominant right now at a level that that is almost kind of hard to comprehend. Like, again, they have lost one set all season. Not match, set. They have swept everyone they have played except for one team that beat them one time. And they won that, and they won that match 3-1. If Indiana even gets it to five sets this Saturday, it would be hugely impressive. If Indiana won, it would be the biggest upset win in the history of this athletics department. And that's not reflective of Indiana. That's reflective of just how dominant Nebraska is right now. Like, this is, you know, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but like, this is something akin to like the Russian hockey, the Soviet hockey team in 1980. Like, that's what Nebraska volleyball is doing this season. And so, you know, if you have $350, you know, feel free to turn out for that match. It's going to be a big one. And then soccer on Sunday, I mean, it's the beat don't stop. But, you know, I think it is certainly for IU football, I think it's a really well-timed buy. You could tell, I think, in that Wisconsin game, players look tired. There are multiple players clearly playing through injuries. There are players Indiana wants to get back. Sounds like Elijah Surratt is getting closer and closer, you know, as of last weekend, I expected him to play in the Purdue game. We'll see kind of what things look like building up to next Friday night. And then with IU basketball, you know, frankly, again, as we talked about earlier, this Kansas State game suddenly looks a little bit more kind of serious than it did, you know, maybe at the beginning of the season, maybe when it came onto the schedule. And so if you're Indiana, having that extra prep time really can't hurt.
Absolutely not. Zach Osterman from the Indy Stars. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you as always. I hope that you get some rest in this weekend.
I'll do my best. You too, Jim.
Appreciate you, brother. Zach Osterman joining us here on this Friday. We've got more coming up. Back with Allie Glasley after this.
Kind of wanted a loud gym, right? Really loud, really juiced up gym. When you've got guys that kind of say like, okay, we're flat. Is that surprising? Is that alarming to you? Just kind of how do you respond to that?
Yeah, a little bit. Especially I thought the last couple of days of practice, our guys, I thought they really learned from some of the things that happened in our last game. I thought they responded really well in practice from an energy level. Here's some of the things we got to fix. You know, and they were playing hard tonight. It just wasn't the same juice. And again, part of it, you know, maybe when the offense isn't flowing, they got to learn how to fight through that. These are all things early in the year that as you're getting going, you learn how to win games in a lot of different ways. And you know, that's an important thing to have and a quality to have. And I thought they did a nice job tonight defensively again in the first half, holding them to 17%. That's back-to-back games in the first half. Our defense was really good. You know, the start of the second halves in both these games, it wasn't quite as good. But I did think our defense, again, was what changed the game around in the second half. So we were able to get that lead pushed back out. And a lot of that was because our defensive intensity just picked up.
Did you see a difference in maybe the talking about the defense in the response to some of the offensive malaise that kind of hit and then it drifted away? But basically, did you see your team play through that defensively without seeing shots go in maybe a little bit better tonight?
Essentially, I think for the most part, yeah, there were still a couple stretches, you know, where we had some empty possessions that maybe. We're at our best when we're able to get into the ball and apply pressure and disrupt. And I thought in the middle of the second half or, you know, whatever, 15, 14 minutes to go there, I thought the lineup change came in and they did a really nice job of coming in and picking up full and disrupting, you know, their catches on the wings. And then our fours and fives and Sam was great really all night. I thought he just had a really good game and was a big factor in getting that lead pushed back up for us.
Yeah, Coach, if you would expand a little on Sam Alexis and just sort of what he's bringing, what do you like, and sort of what are his opportunities here, you know, as you get further in the season?
Yeah, I love what Sam's doing. He's bringing that the physicality, but even more so is you know, the rebounding, the energy level, the enthusiasm. I just like what he's doing for us right now, and he's He's going to play a huge role for us all year, like he already is. But I just like what he's doing. I think he's getting better and better every day too. He's getting more and more comfortable on the offensive end, the defensive end. He's really doing a nice job of coming in and cleaning up, from the backside. I think he had 4 blocks again today. So that's that type of rim protection we're going to need from him, and he's doing a great job with it.
Yeah, well, Lamar, he kind of breathed a sigh of relief after he hit the last one, a couple off shooting nights. What do you tell him, or do you just let, like you said, shoot or shoot? You kind of let him go through it and just kind of shoot through it?
Yeah, I mean, if he was 4-for-17 tonight, that means there's an 11-for-17 coming soon. So he's, he can let him rip whenever he wants. It's like we've always tell our guys, like basketball's basketball. You have. The best players in the world have off nights, and he had an off shooting night. That means he got a good one coming. So it's always about let's make sure we got the win even on those nights. So he's gonna have plenty of good nights too.
That's exactly what I was talking about earlier when I mentioned that Coach DeVries had said this. It has to be a tremendous free feeling as a player to be out there and know that not only do you have a green light to shoot the ball, you're not going to get jerked out of the game for missing a shot, that you get to play through not just mistakes, but if it just like Lamar, shot just not going down, man, what are you going to do? Put him on the bench? No, you got to let the man let shooter shoot. Like Coach Darren DeVries said, sometimes they're just not going to go in, guys. Doesn't matter. We see it all the time. Happens to everybody. Happens to Steph Curry. Happens to anybody. But as I mentioned earlier, what you really hope then is those nights that Darren DeVries just alluded to, the big nights, the big shooting nights, you hope they come in the big games. Louisville, Kentucky coming up. I just keep imagining what it would be like for this team to go down to Rupp Arena and knock off Kentucky in this first game back in this series. I'm sorry. I can't keep thinking about it. I know they've got a big game with Kansas State coming up. They've got a big game with Louisville coming up on the day of the Big Ten Championship. That Kentucky game, I can't get it out of my mind. Mercy. Also last night, Tucker DeVries and Sam Alexis spoke to the media as well.
Attacking practice every day. We do the drills, like the pad drill we do every day in practice, just taking that more serious every time we step on the court. So
we just got to play harder, to be honest. It's been emphasis in practice, and we'll get it fixed.
You mentioned playing harder. Did you feel energy was an issue kind of in the first half or anything like that? And where do you kind of think, not playing hard enough, what's the issue there?
For sure. I think it's pretty obvious we're a little flat. And then I thought Sam, again, saved the day today. Not only with, what he produced on the court, but his energy, his enthusiasm gets everybody going, and even the crowd got into it a little more in the second half. I thought in the first half it was, just dead kind of all around. It was important for our team to bring the energy and coming out. When he came in for the first time in the second half, he really brought it and changed the game again.
Alec Lasley will join us when we come back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Friday. More coming to you right after these messages.
Andy Moore,
welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Friday. And Alec Lasley joining the... Have you started to make the pumpkin pie, and do you have the all the fixings ready to deep fry your turkey outside and blow the damn thing up like everybody else does?
So I'm not a pumpkin pie person.
Not a pumpkin pie. I'm not a pumpkin pie person.
I stick to apple pie. So,
I love. Hey, nothing wrong with some apple pie. A little cinnamon on there. Yeah. Like it. Yeah, so that's, like it a lot.
That's more the route that I go. But slowly getting ready. Seems like every year Thanksgiving kind of comes up out of nowhere. And this year I feel like it I jumped in front of us even quicker. So always exciting. Always good, though.
you know what? It comes around every year. I don't know why people are so surprised that I can't believe it's October. I can't believe it's New Year's Eve. Why not? It happened the exact same time 1 year ago. That's what I like to say, just to be that guy howling at the moon, just to be a comedian. Something not quite funny for Indiana football, with all that's going great for them, they lose their 2026 quarterback commitment, who was a pretty good player, although from way out in San Diego. I find it ironic that that you decommit from a team that is about to potentially produce a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, and you're going to decommit from that school when they don't have a for sure heir apparent. I'm not sold that Alberto is ready to be the guy that Fernando is yet. I think he might be yet another year away. I don't know. But Alec Glasley from thehoosier.com, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously, Cash Herrera
was... Okay, that's enough. That's all we need to hear. No, I'm kidding.
Cash Herrera was committed to Iowa before, decommitted, then committed to Indiana, right? So he's, you know, had a couple different bumps along the way. This was not a surprise to Indiana. I think it was more of a mutual agreement to part ways. Look, I mean, Indiana is not going to just take someone to take someone. I think there's a little bit more potential excitement about what Tyler Cherry has been able to do recovering from his leg injury this past year. So he's, as of now, right, you know, things can change before the spring practice kind of rolls around. But the expectation is he'll at least be back on the field. Not that he's going to, you know, play any significant role in the quarterback kind of hierarchy there, because he still has a long way to get back to actually playing. But obviously, you know, the talent that he has, you know, Alberto's there. The expectation is Indiana's going to grab another very, very talented portal quarterback. And based off of what you've seen with Curtis Rourke, based off of what you've seen with now, obviously, Fernando Mendoza, you go from
Sam Levitt.
Well, I mean, yeah, we'll see. Obviously, there's tons of stuff about him out there. But, you know, you go from getting a guy who's coming off of an ACL injury at Ohio and put him in the top 10 in the Heisman voting. You make a college football playoff. You bring Fernando Mendoza, who is still very talented before, but rework kind of, you know, parts of his game to turn him into not just the Heisman front runner at this point, but potentially the number one overall draft pick. And that's, you know, that's significant when you take someone from a high major level and put them on another high major team, the development there. And now it's not just the track record that this coaching staff has with obviously Mike Shanahan and Kurt Cignetti, not just the track record that they bring from James Madison. Now they've done it 2 years in a row at the high major Big Ten level with Curtis Rourke getting drafted, and then obviously Fernando Mendoza expected to go in the top couple of picks here in the upcoming NFL draft. So I don't anticipate Alberto being the guy come next fall. And I think Indiana saw that they, you know, still had the ability to maybe coming into this year keep Fernando for 2 years, but after that, you know, they've now seen that that's definitely not going to happen. And so they're going to go out and get a high level guy. And it's about, you know, you hear the quote about, right, obviously not rebuilding, just retooling and stuff like that. And
reloading.
And, yeah. And that's what Indiana is going to be doing, once again. And yeah, I expect multiple quarterbacks to be reaching out to Indiana, not the other way around. And I think Indiana is going to have any sort of pick that they want, going into the summer here. Are going into the fall, and then obviously throughout the rest of the winter, what that quarterback position would look like.
Yeah, I think that that's something that Indiana could theoretically do year after year, because Kurt Cignetti is probably going to have his choice within reason. You've got to consider the money side of things, but man. Sam Levitt, the Arizona State quarterback, Jason agrees with me. You know, he's going to be in the wind. And Kurt Cignetti has this track record. And it started before he got to Indiana. You know, he ask him, he'll tell you. He has produced a lot of great quarterbacks through the years. Not any that you have heard of, probably, but it doesn't matter. They worked within his system. And he's had done a masterful job of taking different quarterbacks and getting them to work in his system, actually allowing them to thrive in his system, which in a turn allows his system to thrive.
No, absolutely. Look, I mean, it's a very mutual beneficial relationship between, you know, what Kurt Cignetti's been able to do with his quarterbacks and then vice versa. And I think, you know, the bigger question is who are the pieces that Indiana is going to be returning, right? More so than what high level quarterback are they going to be able to get? You know, you have, you know, Elijah Stratt, you know, not coming back. You know, we'll see the expectation, right? As of now, we'll see if Omar Cooper decides to return. He still has eligibility. You obviously lose Riley Nowakowski. You lose some key pieces.
How big would that be? Line. Getting a guy like Omar Cooper back.
Yeah, and you know, you lose some key pieces on the offensive line. You obviously lose your top two running backs. The expectation there is you're going to reload with a big transfer portal running back as well. You get Lee Beebe, who's going to be back coming off the knee injury, but how truly explosive is he going to be? But the expectation right then is Kobe Martin steps up and takes on a much larger role, which I think everyone is excited about from that standpoint. But I think it's more so who's the quarterback going to be throwing the ball to, and what are those pieces around that offense going to be, more so than is Indiana going to be able to get a high level quarterback. I think that's the expectation. And it's more so the question marks around who that quarterback will be. But, you know, Mike Shanahan, obviously, and Kurt Cignetti have built the reputation to put out powerful, explosive offenses. So there's no doubting that that's going to happen once again next year, regardless of who's on the field.
Exactly. And no, you cannot expect an undefeated season.
And you know, throw in a name that I didn't even mention there, Charlie Becker, right? So you could potentially have Charlie Becker and Omar Cooper throwing.
He's done okay.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, two phenomenal wide receivers there. And Charlie Becker, a guy who obviously has, you know, stepped up in numerous ways, and a guy who's not going to be able to stay off the field now. So just the, you know, the potential there for any quarterback should be enticing enough. But yeah, still some questions about the offensive line, and then obviously some of the running back questions as well.
Well, and again, this season should continue to add to the opportunity to grab better and better offensive line. And the defensive line, I'm still shocked on how well they replaced the production they lost. My gosh, they lost some seriously good players. And boy, that D-line has just stepped up for the most part.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think the injury to Kellen Wyatt was significant, but the play of Stephen Daly, right, his emergence, and it goes back to, you know, what this coaching staff does in the film room and their ability to see the skill level translate from the mid-major level now 2 years in a row to the high major level. And, you know, this is something not just the defensive line, right? Obviously what Aiden Fisher has been able to do at the linebacker spot, obviously D'Angelo Pons was going to be good no matter where he played, but obviously coming from JMU, some of these other pieces that they brought with them as well have been able to translate and step up and be big time players for a number two team in the country that has, you know, college football playoff championship aspirations. And that's something that the development, the knack that this coaching staff has to really get in the film room and look at all the details, look at the production again over potential, which is what has been their kind of mantra since they've been here, is significant. And I think that's one thing that, you know, sometimes could get slightly overlooked nationally, is just what they're able to do. Cause everyone looks at these, you know, big time players at the end of the year and looks at all their stats. A lot of these guys are still mid-major, low major, sometimes even, you know, FCS guys. You know, Elijah Surratt started off at St. Francis, built his way up to go to James Madison, now is an all Big Ten, all American type wide receiver who's going to play in the NFL. So the development that they also bring just two reasons why this coaching staff is just so fundamentally sound, and are able to obviously put in a program that is now, you know, going to be a national power for at least the near future, every single year.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun to watch that as the Hoosiers are off this week. Get to watch a few other teams play, especially down the SEC, to see how things start to take place. Does their spot get solidified even with a loss, depending on what happens below them? What happens with the SEC? And there's still a lot of fun games to watch.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think the interesting part was to hear the new college football committee chair last week, or I guess this past Tuesday, right? The first reveal after he took over, and really talk about, you know, Texas A&M in Indiana. I thought that was interesting because all the conversations up to this point with the committee has been 1 and 2, not necessarily 2 and 3. You know, we've always talked about, and I've always thought that, you know, Indiana, A&M and Ohio State are clearly the top three teams nationally. And then there's a significant drop off after that from about 4 to 7, 4 to 8. But it was interesting to hear him talk about, you know, the Texas A&M comeback, obviously down what I think, you know, 27 points to South Carolina, the ability to come back. And he brought up part of the conversation a couple weeks ago when Indiana obviously had to come from behind to beat Penn State, a team that, you know, obviously has not lived up to the expectations and does not have a great record either. But the conversation that he had was, you know, both times in the second half, you know, A&M and Indiana looked like the number two and number three team in the country. And every team is going to have, you know, a bad half or a slow start. It's about how you overcome that. So I thought that was interesting to just hear how he really looked at those rankings. We'll see what happens, though, moving forward, right? I mean, I think the expectation is you're going to go in to championship weekend with these three teams being the top three teams. And then, you know, we'll see how things shape up after that expected Indiana-Ohio State showdown and what the rankings look like following that game. I think that's what everyone's anticipating, not only from that standpoint, but who's going to get the Big Ten championship, who's going to get potentially the Heisman Trophy from Julian Sain or Fernando Mendoza at that point of the season, and obviously what happens in the college football playoff seeding for those two teams.
A lot of stuff on the line, baby. What we made it through. Alec Lasley from thehoosier.com. Thank you, sir. Make sure you go to thehoosier.com, become a subscriber, get entered for lots of free great giveaway merch as well. Give a subscription away for a great gift idea for your favorite Hoosier friend, family member, whatever. What a great gift. 50% off, free subscription to The Athletic. Entered into for some great gear. Hell, the grand prize package worth over $400. All kinds of good stuff, Alec.
Absolutely. Make sure you take advantage. Obviously, great holiday gifts for just about anyone. And no better coverage out there than what we have over there. So definitely take advantage.
That's going to wrap it up for Indiana Sports Beat Radio today. Appreciate each and every one of you. Thanks to James Fletcher from On3, Zach Osterman, Alec Lasley. Most importantly, each and every one of you. Without you, we've got no reason to be here. Until Monday, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.